So tonight we're going to dedicate the shir Le'ilui Nishmas Yaakov Yehoshua ben Avram Yitzchak. Mrs. Lefkowitz's father, his yahrzeit is tonight, Chaf Av. The Neshama should have an aliyah, and the learning that we do should be Le'ilui Nishmaso. We only introduced Perek Hey last week. We didn't really begin. We said that the topic of Perek Hey was going to surround itself around Saras. Saras, which is a little bit of a loaded term. And we said that there was actually a machlokas amongst the mefarshim. Is this tsaras that we understand tsaras, which is a spiritual malady that's talked about in Parshas Tazria and Parshas Metzora? And we said the only problem with that is that the Mishnah in Maseches Negayim says that a non-Jewish person is not allowed to get tsaras. It doesn't come. They're immune to it. It's not a disease for non-Jews. It's specifically a spiritual disease for the spiritual people. And so that's why some understand that this was actually leprosy, the secular form of leprosy, and that there just is no other word for leprosy than to use tsaras. And the other approach says that this case of Naaman, who we're about to be introduced to, it was a unique case where Hashem suspended the normal spiritual nature of the world, where a non-Jewish person was able to get tzaras in order, as we're going to see, to bring about kvod shamayim, to bring about honoring Hashem on a grand scale. So we'll begin pasuk aleph. The Naaman sar tziva melech Aram. There was a man named Naaman. He was the commanding officer, the commander of the army of the king of Aram. Haya ish gadol, he was a great man. Lifnei Adonav, before his master. Unesufanim, and he was well honored, he was full of honor. Kivo, because it was through him, Nasan Hashem Teshual Aram. Hashem had granted a salvation or a victory to the nation of Aram. And this man was a great warrior, Mitzora. He was a leper. He had tsaras. This Naaman. So the pasuk is, in a way, like many other psukim, is introducing to us the perek, and it's telling us right from the start who is the focus of this perek. The focus is going to be this individual named Naaman. And we're given a lot of information about him. Just in basic, we're told that he's the commanding officer. Sounds like he's the general. He's an ish gadol lifnei Adonav. Who is his only master? His only master is the king. As we're going to see throughout the story, he does have a relationship with the king, and it makes sense. If he's the general, usually the general is going to have a very good relationship with the king. He has great honor to his name because Hashem had granted through him the salvation to Aram. What is that a reference to? So both here and where the salvation actually happened, Rashi makes a similar comment, quoting from the Medrash, that there were three battles between Klal Yisrael and the kingdom of Aram. The first two, miraculously, Klal Yisrael were victorious. The third battle that Achav led against Aram, Klal Yisrael lost the battle, and Achav was killed. Who killed Achav? Naaman. This individual, Naaman, killed Achav. And that's why he was kind of raised up on the shoulders of his fellow soldiers, and he was honored because he was one who killed the foreign Israelite king. But what the pasuk tells us, and we learned it together towards the end of Malachim Aleph, is that he didn't even know that he was aiming at Achav. The pasuk says that there was a soldier who kind of just pulled his bow and let it go, what's called lefitumo. Lefitumo almost means haphazardly. There's a concept in halacha, when it comes to accepting testimony, there's a certain type of testimony known as mesiach lefitumo, conversations that happen haphazardly. I'm sitting at the coffee shop, and in the table behind me, I hear two individuals having a conversation, not knowing that I'm Mr. Nosy and I'm eavesdropping. and I hear information, let's say, about a case. Can I? It's possible that a certain degree, what I hear will actually be admitted as testimony because they didn't know I was listening. So what they were saying was there's no reason to assume that they were being dishonest one to another. Misiach lifi tuma, they were just haphazardly having a conversation. And so that's what happened. This soldier happened to just shoot his bow. Maybe he thought he's shooting it just at a bunch of the Israelites. Who did he end up striking? The king, Achav. Now, what does it look like to everybody else? To everyone else, it looks like he's a sharpshooter. And you could imagine, I haven't seen anyone say this, but if you were Naaman, would you go back to your friends and say, well, I was just kind of shooting and I happened to kill the king? But no, I saw him in my sight. He came up on the, you know, with the X on the gun, and I saw it and I shot him and I'm the hero. And we're going to see that that reaction much more fits with Naaman's personality. Naaman, we're going to see in many different ways, is quite the haughty individual. And some Mefarshim actually explain that that's why he got Tzaras, because he was haughty. And haughtiness is one of the sins that a person can receive Tzaras for. We're usually accustomed to the sin of Lashon Hara, of evil speech about another, being attributed to Tzaras. But the Gemara mentions a whole list, about 7-8 things that a person could do wrong that would bring about Tzaras. So that's how Naaman got onto the scene. And he struck with Tzaras. There's a professor in Israel, his name leaves my mind. He says in this pasuk, he thinks it's an extremely loaded pasuk, because he sees four clauses in the pasuk. We'll read it together again, pasuk Aleph. V'Naaman sar tziva melech Aram. That's clause number one. That Naaman was the officer of the army of the king of Aram. Hayish gadol lifnei Adonav, and he was a great man in front of his master. Unusufanim kivo nasan Hashem teshua la'aram, and he had he was well honored because Hashem had brought about salvation through him. V'ishaya gibor chayel mitzora, he was a great warrior and he had tzaras. And his professor points out, if you take a look at these four phrases, if we had a board, we would write it down. Each phrase of the four starts out with something grand, and then the second part of the phrase totally minimizes and takes away from the grandeur. Right? Follow with me again this approach. Naaman sar tziva, he's the commanding officer of an army. Melech Aram, it's not his army, it's the king's army. Haya ish gadol, he's a great man. Lifnei Adonav, he's before his master. He's subservient to his master. Unesufanim, he has great honor. Kivo nasan Hashem teshua l'aram. It was Hashem who caused him to be the puppet that would bring the teshua. Va'ishaya gibor chayil, he's this great warrior. Mitzoru, he has tzaras. And that this being the beginning pasuk of the perek, it's trying to show that specifically when it comes to the character flaw of haughtiness, everyone has someone who's on top of them, and everyone is in their position for a certain reason. And you shouldn't necessarily think that since you're the this, that you're so great, because there's someone on top of you. Hashem's pulling the strings. You end up with tzaras. You're not all that special in a sense that you should be full of yourself. And that seems to be playing through the perek, that you think you're very, very high and you're very, very important, but we're going to see that salvation can come through the most humble and simple of ways. So here you have this Naaman, and he had tzaras. Yeah. What the translation? Where? Right here. I mean, in the Art Scroll translation, it says "Vehaish Hayagibor Chayel Mitzora." The man was a great warrior, a leper. Do you like that better?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The but is not part
of the sentence. Right. Correct. Correct. You have to the
in my book it says but he was a leper, and then it says the Hebrew was simply a leper.
Uh-huh. Okay, so that's that he's the by adding but he was a leper is trying to help you read it a little better, a little smoother, as opposed to but maybe you're supposed to have that abrupt right. Right, definitely. Okay, so he has tzaras. He's a leper. Again, how you want to understand it, whether it's classic leprosy or real tzaras, the way the parak plays out and the fact that he goes to the extent that he goes to try to solve his tzaras, it sounds like it's real tzaras, the spiritual disease, because he doesn't seek the greatest. If you have leprosy, that's quote-unquote real leprosy, so you should seek doctors, not spiritual treatments. So that it definitely sounds like it's real. It smells like real tzaras. Pasuk Beis. The Aram Yatso Gedudim. Aram, and meaning the armies of Aram, had gone out in groups, which are kind of small forces of the army that would go out just to raid a town, just to go ahead and cause mischief and trouble, not all out. This is not a time of all out war between Klal Yisrael and Aram. V'Aram yatsu gedudim, v'yishbu me'eretz Yisrael nara ketana, and they captured from the land of Israel a nara who's a ketana. V'atihi lifnei eshes Naaman, and she was before the wife of Naaman as a slave girl. Now, the pasuk is a very awkward phrase, nara and ketana, because in the Torah has a way of referring to all types of young ladies. Before a young lady reaches the age of 12, she's called a ketana. From age 12 to age 12 and a half, she's called a nara. From age 12 and a half and older, whether I can't promise by memory that the Torah does this, but definitely the Mishnayos and the Gemara refer to her as a bogeres or bogeret. Those are the three terms for a young lady. And so here they use two of the terms. So which one is it? Is she a naira, which would be older than age 12, or is she a ketana, who is younger than age 12? The pasuk is going to refer to her again in Pasuk Dalet as just a Na'ara. However, there are some Mefarshim who explain that they're just bothered by it can't be both. They say she was a Ketana, meaning she was under the age of 12, but she came from a town that had the words Nun Ayin Resh in it. So she came from a town called like Na'ar, that was the town. So she was the Ketana who came from Na'ar. Na'ara, she came from Na'ar. Now, the only problem with that is that in two psukim later, it refers to her as just Na'ara. So, what maybe is trying to happen, and this is maybe from that, I don't remember again, this might be from that same professor I quoted, who I didn't quote his name because I forgot it. Na'ara Ketana is coming to highlight how, quote-unquote, small and insignificant on paper this girl is. She's a slave girl. She was captured. Not only is she being described as a Na'ara, which is already, you know, definitely way back when, in that time period, a 12 and a half year old girl is not so significant. Then she's also called a Ketana. And we're going to see that it's her who comes up with the idea that actually leads to Naaman being cured. So here you have this great Ish Gibor Chayil, kind of all the way up there thinking so high of himself. And where's his remedy going to come from? A Na'ara Ketana. And that you need to realize that, first of all, there might be more value to the Na'ara Ketana than you think, than you actually are as an Ish Gibor Chayil. And that you need to understand the value of every single person. So that might be why. But again, I think in the end, the question might just be better than the answer. Why exactly she's referred to as both Na'ara and Ketana. So the Gemara says she came from the city of they say Na'aron. again, having that same shorish of nun ayin resh, but then in the next, then two psukim later, for it to refer to it again as nara, you would expect at that point you would call it the ketana. You don't refer to her by the place that she came. Now, why are we being told about her? Right? It sounds like she. It sounds like she's an innocent bystander that was kidnapped. And you have to imagine if they had these raiding parties, that there were probably, unfortunately, many young girls that were kidnapped, maybe even young boys that were kidnapped, and many other crimes that took place. So one approach actually is that because this young girl was taken and was working in the house of Naaman, that might have been another reason for his punishment of Tsaras. That in terms of him, he was punished for kidnapping this specific young girl. Were there perhaps other crimes with other kidnappings? Maybe. But here we're focused on specifically Naaman, specifically the general. Pasuk Gimel. Vatomer el Gevirta. She, the young slave girl, Jewish slave girl, said to her mistress, said to Mrs. Naaman, Achale Adoni lifnei hanavi asher b'shomron. The word achale, so the Metzudas Tzion tells us it means a request or a prayer, like from Parshas, he says, like from Parshas Kisisa, when Moshe Rabbeinu tries to daven and beg Hashem after the sin of the golden calf. It's the laning that we have on a fast day. It's Vayechal Moshe. And Moshe gave his supplications before Hashem. So she says, the prayers of my master, that's a reference to Naaman, should be brought lifnei hanavi asher b'shomron, before the prophet that is in Shomron, in the land of Eretz Yisrael, in the city of Shomron, a reference to none other than Elisha. Oz, then, ye'esof oso mitzarto. He will be healed from his tzaras. With a strange word of ye'esof. The Radak explains, usually the word, what does the word asaf mean? To gather. So the Radak explains that when it comes to tzaras, what happens in tzaras? What happens is that after the, in a normal case of tzaras, you call the Kohen, and the Kohen takes a look at your, at the skin in inflammation, and determines whether or not it's tzaras. If it is indeed tzaras, you're supposed to go outside in the time of the Torah in the Midbar in the desert. You had to go outside the machaneh. You had to go outside the camp. You had to be separated from normal society, and you have to be in seclusion for at least 1 week. Then the Kohen would come back and check it. If it got better, then you would be able to be brought back. If not, you had to stay a little longer. But the idea is that you were kind of out from society. How do you get healed from tzaras? A sign of being healed is when you're gathered back in. When you're gathered back into your friends and family, then you're cured from that happens simultaneously with being cured from tzaras. That's why the word ye'esof, which normally means to gather, is being used here. So here the slave girl is saying, the Naira Ketana is saying to Mrs. Naaman, the prayers of my master, of Naaman, should come before Elisha Hanavi, who's in Shomron, and then he'll be cured. This is the suggestion. Now, you have to imagine, because we're about to read in Pasuk Dalid, that the suggestion is going to be taken very seriously. So you have to go into the mind of Naaman just for a moment. I don't want you to get, you shouldn't really be in his mind too much, because he's not such a great guy. But you have to think about how much pain he must have been in, and how many other remedies he must have tried, that he's about to take the words of a slave girl seriously. It just doesn't sound, when you're the general of an army, so you would imagine if there was a play taking place and you were watching the play, and there's a general of the army and the young slave girl in the household, and she makes a suggestion, the guy would throw a drink at her, or would say, get out of here, young, child. What are you telling? You're giving me advice of how I'm supposed to heal my tzaras. So first of all, maybe you could just think, maybe Naaman understood that this is not regular, right? he probably thought it was leprosy at first, going with that approach, that it wasn't, that it was the spiritual disease. So he went to all the doctors and they gave him all the antibiotics of the day and they put on all the ointments and creams and they prayed to all the gods that there were in Aram and nothing works. All of a sudden, the out-of-the-box idea comes where she says, I know how to cure your tzaras. Now, you're going to raise the question that we talked just briefly about last week, is that if it's real tzaras, why is she sending him to Elisha when Elisha was a Navi and not a Kohen? It's normally only a Kohen, not a Navi. You could have the greatest, you know, the greatest Talmud Chacham in the world, right? Reb Chaim Kamenetsky, the greatest Gadol in Eretz Yisrael, if there was tzaras and we had a Beis Hamikdash, she wouldn't go to him. He's not a Kohen. He's everything what he is, right? Rabbi Soloveitchik wasn't a Kohen. He was a Levi. But he can't paskin on tzaras. It has to be a Kohen, right? Everyone always calls up Rabbi Waxick with their shilas, but when it comes to tzaras, you have to call Menachem Gross or Jerry Kleinman. That's just the way it is. Hopefully they become experts in the laws of tzaras. So what you're forced to say when we finish the perek and you take a look at it in its totality, is that Elisha was once again going to perform a miracle like we've seen. And when Elisha performs miracles, it highlights the role of Hashem in the world. And here you're going to have kind of a huge advertisement of who Hashem is, not only to Klal Yisrael, but even to Aram through their general. And so that's why this is a unique case of tzaras. Again, it has to be unique. If you understand it as real tzaras, it has to be unique because it's violating the laws of the Torah. The laws of the Torah is that tzaras can only be on a Jew. So since this is a quirky case of tzaras, that it's coming on a non-Jew, so it's also a quirky case of tzaras that the doctor is not a Kohen, but the spiritual doctor is the Navi. And this was her idea. Pasuk Dalet. Vayavo vayaged la'adonav lemor. And he came, meaning Naaman. And he told to his master, which is the king, saying as follows, Kazos v'chazos dibra hanara. Such and such, the young girl, spoke, Asher me'eretz Yisrael, she is from the land of Israel. Now the king is about to take the idea seriously as well. So it's also must be that perhaps Naaman told the king, listen, I've tried it all, and I'm not going to be able to be an effective general of yours if I'm stricken with this disease. It's not a skin condition that you could that he was able to live with and to suffer through. And the king replies, Pasuk Hey, Vayomer Melech Aram, the king of Aram said, Lechbo, go and approach the Esh Lecha Sefer El Melech Yisrael, and I will send with you a letter, a scroll, to the king of Israel, meaning at this time it's Yehoram, the son of Achav, Vayelech, and he went, Vayikach biyado, and Naaman took in his hands, Eser kikrei chesef, 10 talents of silver, Visheshes alafim zahav, and 6,000 pieces of gold, the Eser Chalifos Begadim, and 10 changes of clothing. So Naaman is thinking, and the king is thinking, that we need to get to the Navi. We should go through the king of Israel. Because the king of Israel must have a good relationship with the Navi. Now we know that the kings of Israel hardly ever had a good relationship with the Navi. The Malchus of Yehuda, that's a separate discussion. But the Malchus of Yisrael, who had a good relationship with the Navi? Yeravim ben Nevat had a good relationship. Achav had a great relationship with Elisha. He hated him. I mean, Achav and Eliyahu. But now Achav's son and Elisha, it wasn't a good relationship. But the mindset, and Rabbi Alex Israel reminds us of this, and this is something that we've seen before, is that in the secular world at that time, all of the prophets worked for the king. And if whatever the king wants, the prophet does. And so if the king wants you to cure someone, the prophet goes and he cures someone. So in the Aram language, I don't mean language, but in the Aram culture, the king is supreme and the prophet is subservient to the king. It doesn't work that way by Klal Yisrael. The Navi is subservient to someone, but he's subservient only to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're all subservient to HaKadosh. The whole world is subservient to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That notion doesn't necessarily exist. The gods come, the gods are there to serve your needs in the Avodah Zarah world, while we believe that we are here, we are Avdei Hashem, we serve God. And so, but that's their thinking. And so Naaman thinks that he needs help from the king, and the king thinks, you know what, I'll help you out. I'll write a letter to the king of Israel, and then everything will be taken care of. You walk in with a letter to the king from me, the king will go ahead and he'll tell the Navi, and the Navi will take care of it, and problem solved. Now Naaman brings, as the Pasuk describes, quite the gift with him. 10 talents of silver, 6,000 pieces of gold, 10 changes of clothing. Because Naaman is working with a secular approach, that if you're coming to a Navi, you got to give him something. You have to give him a little bit of, give him a tip. This is for the Navi. This is for the Navi. As we'll see, because the Psukim are going to talk about Naaman actually offering it. And some hint to the fact that maybe you look back in the Chumash a couple of weeks ago when we read Parshas Balak, that Bilam hinted to Balak that you're going to have to give me quite a lot in order for me to be your prophet. That if you want me to be your prophet and do what you want, you have to pay up. There's a bill. There's a charge. That's not necessarily a Jewish concept when it comes to the Navi. And we'll see we'll wait and see Elisha's attitude towards the gift. But nonetheless, Naaman brings it along. Pasuk Vav. Vayave ha-sefer el melch Yisrael le'mor. And he brought to the king of Israel this letter, this scroll, which said as follows. V'yata enel, kivo ha-sefer hazeh elecha, as this letter comes to you. Hine shalachti elecha es Naaman avdi. Behold, I'm sending to you, King of Israel, Naaman, my servant, asafto mitzarato, and you should heal him from his tzaras, from his leprosy. Yeah. Didn't who kill? Naaman killed this person's father. Correct. Correct. They're sending. Right, Naaman was, I never thought about it this way, but it's true. According to Chazal, Naaman killed Ahav, and he's coming to Ahav's son to ask for help. Which you think would put the king in an awkward position. But we're going to see it does put the king in an awkward position, but not in the awkward position that you're thinking of. Now, I think it's a little misleading, as we were talking about before, that translation sometimes can be a little misleading. In my translation, and for this purpose, I'm not going to tell you what translation I'm using because I don't want to talk bad. Before the, when it gets to the words va'ata, when it gets to the text of the scroll, va'ata kuvo ha-sefer, so before it says the words va'ata in English, and now it has three dots, dot, 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 which makes it sound like the letter had more things to say before this line. That's a machlokas amongst the mafarshim. The Radak says that. The Radak says that there had to have been more to this letter. It probably started out with, I, the king of Aram, am writing to you, the king of Israel, blah, 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 a lot of flowery language. And we get, you know, this is not, again, we point out all the time, this is not the court stenographer writing every single detail that happened during the time period of Sefer Melachim. We get the important details. We get the details that hundreds of years later, through Nevuah, Yirmiyahu HaNavi thought it's important for us to know, to appreciate the story from the beginning of the kings to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And so the Radak says there must have been more to this letter, and that's why my English translation has a dot, dot, dot. There are others who explain that no, it was exactly like this. No formalities, no niceties. And now I'm sending you my servant, Naaman, heal him. And when you read it like that, with one sentence, it's heal him. And how would you understand it? Heal him or else. And that is exactly how Yehoram, the son of Ahav, who's king, takes it. Because what is his reaction? Pasuk Zion. Vayihi kikro melech Yisrael asasefer. When Yehoram, the king of Israel, read this letter, vayikra begadav, he tore his clothing. Not a good thing. Vayomer, and he said, Ho'alokim ani lahamis ulachayos. Am I God that I could cause life and I could cause death? It happens to be that Chazal referred to someone who has tzaras as someone who's dead. So it's even a good usage of words, considering the fact that it was actually tzaras. So Ha'alokim ani lahamis ulachayos. Am I a God that I could cause life and death? That this has been sent to me, la'asof ish mitzarato, to go ahead and cure a man from his tzaras. Ki ach du'u na ure'u. Realize, understand and realize and see, ki mis'anehuli. He seeks a pretext against me. As the Mitzvah Sion says, mevakesh alila. He's seeking a libel. They're trying to provoke me. They're trying to say, here, do the impossible. If you can't do the impossible, we'll go to war with you. Go to war with me? Do you know the history of my people with Aram? Yeah, way back when, my father was successful going into battle. But that was only when he joined up forces with the king, with Malchus Yehuda. And in the last battle, my father was killed. We're powerless. There have been raiding parties coming in, as the Pasuk described. We've had our young girls kidnapped, as the Pasuk described. And now he's coming and asking me the impossible? Now, what's also very telling? He's not thinking that Elisha can help. He's not thinking that, wait, there's a way out. The way out is Elisha. Elisha can save the day. Why isn't he thinking of Elisha? So first of all, it highlights the fact that the king of Aram had it all wrong. The king of Aram thought, oh, if I go through the king, I'll automatically get to the Navi. The Barbanel says, you see, clearly not. Clearly, Elisha and Yehoram, the king of Israel, did not have a good relationship. The Radak says, kind of at a different, just a little bit of a different angle, he says, it's clear that it's not even going through Yehoram's mind to ask Elisha. He's ashamed. He's embarrassed. Elisha has been trying to persuade him to go in the proper way for a long time. There was the whole miracle of the water with the soldiers. And clearly, Elisha was not a welcome member of the court. And so now to turn to him, it's not even coming into his mind. He's embarrassed. He doesn't even think of it. So he tears his garments because he thinks there's no way to get out of this. It's a dead end. It's a trap. You know, obviously it looks like he has tzaras. You know, I don't think he's thinking that it's a type of makeup or something like that. He probably thinks it is tzaras, but he's asking me to do the impossible. So pasuk ches. Vayihi kishmoa Elisha ish Elokim. It was when Elisha, the man of God, heard. Ki kara melech Yisrael es begadav. He heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes. Vayishlach al hamelech leimor, and he sent word to the king saying, Lama karata begadecha? Why did you tear your clothing? Yavona elai. Bring him or send him to me now, please. V'yeda, and he will know. Kiyesh Navi be Israel, that there is a prophet in Israel. So how does Elisha hear this? So there's two options. One, he turned on his Navi radio, and he heard through Nevuah, Hashem allowed him to know that such and such was taking place in the palace. The king rent his garments because there was this visitor who has tzaras and needs to be healed. And so he sends word, send him to me and I'll heal him. Or you could take a more, I guess, less divine approach that you could, right? What's going on in the palace when the servants are watching this happen? They see a foreign dignitary, the commanding officer, the general of Aram, come into the palace, says something to the king. Let's even go with the fact that they don't know exactly what he said. And the king's reaction, you have to imagine, he's still in front of the general. So what is Naaman thinking? That we're not told. The king rips his clothing. So all of a sudden, word gets out of the palace, the king ripped his clothing. Why did the king rip his clothing? And the rumors are flying, and it gets to Elisha. And so he finds out in kind of what you would call the normal way. And Elisha decides to step up to the plate to go ahead and cure this Naaman. The Yeda, as the Pasuk stresses, and Naaman will know ki yesh navi b'Yisrael. It's almost like the Pasuk is putting a stress that I'm not going to cure Naaman because of Naaman's sake. I'm going to cure Naaman because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's sake. That he will know that there is a Navi, right, be Yisrael. It's not a statement that's being made to show himself honor, because then he could have said a phrase like Ish Gibor be Yisrael, that there's a great man in Israel. He's saying the word Navi because a Navi is only as great as the one who's giving him the prophecy. And if he's a Navi Lashem, so he's attributing the whatever he does to Hashem. Pasuk Tes. Vayavo Naaman besusa v'berichbo. So Naaman comes with his horses and his chariots. Vayamod Pesach Abayis LeElisha, and he stops at the entrance to Elisha's house. This is the first time we've been told that Naaman didn't travel alone. Naaman seems to have traveled with quite the entourage. He's got horses, he's got chariots. We'll see later on that there are servants, that he traveled in a group. Now, you take a step back, and it kind of makes sense. He's not a nobody. He's the general of Aram. The general of Aram is not going to travel alone. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I think the Secretary of Defense traveled to Israel. Of the United States. I doubt he traveled by himself. I imagine he has a staff. I imagine he has security detail, and he's got a whole to do that we all paid for to go to Israel. Which is important. So Naaman has this whole group with him, and the pasuk is very clear. He stopped at the doorway. He did not go in to Elisha. Now, why did he not go into Elisha? I'm the general. I'm the general of Aram. I should get off my horse and go into the Navi's house? No. I'll stay on my horse outside, and the Navi will come and serve me. That's what Naaman is thinking. And that fits into Naaman's MO of being haughty, and maybe that's the reason why he got the tzaras. But Elisha, much like his Rebbe Eliyahu, doesn't play games. Pasuk Yud. Vayishlach Elav Elisha Malach Lemor. Elisha sends a messenger. You don't want to come into my house? I'm not coming to you. I'll send you my messenger. Saying as follows, I'll give you the right recipe of what to do. Haloch, you should go. V'rachatzta sheva pamim bayardin. And you should wash yourself, immerse, what we would call go to the mikveh, in the yardin, in the Jordan River, 7 times. V'yashov bisarcha, your flesh will be returned, lecha to you, utahar, you'll be cleansed. That's what you need to do. That's all you need to do. But Elisha specifically would not go and tell him in person, because Naaman didn't deserve that. If Naaman wasn't going to show the proper respect to a Navi of Hashem, Elisha was in no way obligated to show respect back to him. What's this bathing seven times in the Jordan River about? So the Mefarshim go to town, explaining many different ways that in some ways that this really isn't such a special cure. It's going in the Jordan River. There's nothing, quote unquote, necessarily special about the waters of the Jordan River, as opposed to, let's just say, other bodies of water, let's say in Eretz Yisrael. The Jordan River is not a magical river. It's part of Eretz Yisrael. And the Kliyakar explains that maybe Elisha wanted Naaman to appreciate the qualities of Eretz Yisrael, not to go in one of his own rivers, but to go in the rivers of Eretz Yisrael. And that's fine. It's a fine belief to believe that the rivers of Eretz Yisrael are more special than the rivers outside of Eretz Yisrael. We read in the Kina that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi wrote about Tzion, how he wrote about how the air of Eretz Yisrael, it's a different air in Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara talks about Avira d'Eretz Yisrael Machkim, that the atmosphere of Eretz Yisrael makes someone wiser. That the Eretz Yisrael is different. We're allowed to believe that, and it's more of, it could be, it's a mix of physical and spiritual. We're allowed to believe that about Eretz Yisrael. But it could be that Elisha wanted the cure to come about in a normal way, for him to realize that you'll be sick and you'll be cured, all because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to be. So you might think you need all this, a remedy that's filled with different types of potions and this and that. You can go in regular water, and it can cure, because Hashem wants it to cure. Much like we had with some of the other stories, right? We had in the last parak, we had a pot that was kind of either poisonous or tasted terrible, and he put in flour, and flour solved it. Again, so you know, it's a kind of on the natural. Now we've pointed out that Naaman's problem is a lack of humility. So water is always the symbol of being something humble. Because what does water do? Water finds the lowest place. Right? If God forbid you have a leak on a second floor, the water will find that point on the second floor, which is the lowest, and from there try to go to the next floor. And that's just what happens. In case anybody's wondering, in the house that we live in, it's the chandelier in the dining room. Because three and a half years ago, within our first couple of months here, we actually found that out. So water will go to the lowest point possible. And so water represents humility, and that is, it usually it happens to be in the normal process of tzaras, we try to bring in humility. We use what's called an agudas ezov, which is a hyssop. Hyssop is always a hard word for me because I don't really. It's a type of grass. It's a spice to cook with. Okay, but it comes from a grass. But hyssop, it's a grass that grows very low to the ground. And it's used in the purification process of a metzora in order to kind of highlight the fact that you need to be low. You need to be more humble. The Abarbanel suggests that it could be that specifically the Jordan, I imagine this would have been any water, would have been cold. And you would expect that the cold water on a skin condition would only aggravate it more. And yet, it, because it's coming from the Navi of Hashem telling you to do it, it'll go ahead and cure. That'll kind of make the miracle all the more grand, right? You thought that it was going to be, right? That's why, right? Moshe Rabbeinu, by Mara, the water is very, very bitter. So what does Hashem tell him to do? Take the bark of a tree. Bark of a tree doesn't really taste good and sweet. Take the bark of a tree, put that in the water. That'll make the water sweet. That accentuates the miracle. It highlights the miracle. And so that's a possibility. The seven times, there are some who write about seven times. The number seven is pretty significant in spiritual terms. And so this is what Naaman is being told through a messenger. So he's told to do something mundane through a messenger. What's his reaction? Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayiktsof Naaman. Naaman became angered. Vayelach, and he left. Vayomer, and he said, Hinei amarti. Behold, I said a lie to myself. Yetze yatsa. That this Navi would definitely, surely he would come out. Va'amad, and he would stand. V'kara b'shem Hashem Elokav, and he would call out in the name of Hashem, his God. V'heinif yado, and he would wave his hands, El HaMakom, over the place where I have his tzaras. Right, he'd wave his magic wand. V'asaf mehametzora, and he would heal the leprosy. That's what I thought was going to go ahead and happen. The Mefarshim say, when it says Vehenef Yado Alamakom, either it means to like hover his hand over the affected area, or maybe Hamakom with a capital Hey, referring to Hashem and Hashem's presence in the Beis Hamikdash. Maybe he would try to like wave Hashem's presence from the direction of the Beis Hamikdash to the location of where I'm standing or when I'm on the horse to heal the tzaras. Pasuk Yud Beis. Halo tov, amana, ufar par, naharos damasek. Are not the amana and farpar rivers of Damascus, meaning of Aram, aren't they tov, aren't they better? Mikol meimei Yisrael, from all the waters of Israel, this lowly country over here? Halo archatz behem v'tarati, I've washed in them, shouldn't I become pure? Vayifen vayilach b'chema, he turned and he went in anger. He cannot appreciate what Elisha is asking of him. He's saying, he's asking me to go into water. I go in water all the time. Nothing's happened. Right? Like what we were saying before, you're imagining that before he went on the whim of this slave girl, he must have tried multiple remedies. Skin condition, remedies, probably involved water. He said, I've been in water. I've bathed in the water of Damascus. What could be better than the rivers of Damascus? Not the waters of Israel. And so why is he telling me this? And the Mefarshim also point out, he was enraged that Elisha didn't come out to him. How dare that prophet not come out and greet me, the great general of Aram? So that's his reaction. And he's gone. There doesn't seem to be any rationality in terms of his thinking. He's too invested personally. His emotions are clearly getting the better of him. But there are those who are with him who are just naturally less emotionally involved because it's not them. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayigshu avadov. His servants approached him. Vayidabere love, and they spoke to him. You have to imagine that they were probably a little nervous before they said what they're about to say. Vayomerin, they said, Avi, my father. They referred to him with a great amount of respect, calling him father. Davar gadol hanavi diber elecha halos aseh. If the Navi would have asked you to do a great and hard thing, would you not have done it? And now that he's just asking you to do the simple thing of bathe and become cleansed, and bathe and you'll be healed, like why not? Meaning, they seem to be saying that had Elisha said, you know, you need to travel to these five places, gather up these ingredients, mix them together, drink them while standing upside down on top of a mountain, and then you'll be healed. So you'd have said, wow, I traveled all this way to the Navi, and he told me this amazing remedy. You would have done it because you want to be healed. So now that he's just asking you to do something very little, we came all this way, let's at least give it a try. Now, I will point out, and I didn't see anyone talk about this, we did see Naaman say what he thought was going to happen. He didn't think it was going to be a davar gadol. He thought Elisha was going to come out and wave his hand and just fix the problem on the spot. So how you work those two things together, I'm not exactly sure. Naaman already told us, and the Navi tells us what Naaman thought was going to happen. And here the servants are saying, well, if the Navi would have asked you to do something great, so maybe you have to say to yourself that, listen, had the Navi come out to him and said, listen, I really want to help you and really given all the covenant in the world to Naaman, so then Naaman would probably have gone along with anything that Elisha had said. So the servants make a case, and again, they weren't emotionally involved. They were able to think rationally. And even if they don't believe it's going to be, even if there's just a 1 in 100 chance, we schlepped all this way, and nothing, and in parentheses, you have to imagine, and nothing else has worked, let's give it a shot. Pasuk Yudalid, Vayered Vayitbol Bayardein Sheva Pa'amim. So he, Naaman, went down and immersed in the Jordan River 7 times, Kidvar Yesh Elokim, like the man of God had said, like Elisha had said, wouldn't you know it, by Yashav Bisaro, his flesh came back, Kibsar Nar Katan, like the flesh of a Nar Katan, of a lad who's small. Same phrase. Vayitar, and he was totally cleansed. That he went, he gave it a shot, he didn't think it was going to work, and lo and behold, it worked. And his flesh came back. It came back like a nar katan, which is the same exact oxymoron of a phrase. A katan is a boy who's under the age of 13. A nar is over the age of 13. I'm not 1,000% sure how old a nar is, what the maximum age of a nar. It could be a boy, could be referred to a nar, maybe until he gets married. Yosef is called a nar when he's dealing with his brothers. He's clearly an older teenager when that story takes place. But why is this phrase used? Perhaps it's used to bring us all the way back. Where did the idea come from? It came from a naraktana. The naraktana gave you the idea, you the great general who couldn't figure out how to cure your tzaras. It came, a small naraktana was able to help you bring your skin back to the quality of a narakatan, of that with a youthful look to the skin, and definitely a healthy, right? Most children have healthy skin. A lot of times anything poor to the skin happens later on in life. But for the most part, when there's health, The young child has healthy skin, and that's why his skin gets this youthfulness to it. And so he's automatically healed. Pasuk Tesvav. Vayashav Elish Elokim. So Naaman comes back to the man of God, comes back to Elisha. Hu v'chol machanehu. He and his entire camp. It's now a machane. Now we really see he was traveling with a lot. Vayomo vayamo lefanav, and he comes and he stands before Elisha. Vayomer, and he says, Hineinu yadati ki ein Elokim v'chol ha'aretz ki im b'Yisrael. He says, behold, now I know there is no God in all of the whole world except for in the land of Israel. V'ata, and now, kach na b'racha me'es avdecha. Please take the tribute from your servant. So in a most amazing shift, Naaman changes his tune. He sees that the words of Elisha were right, and he recognizes that there is Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, V'haya b'yom ahu yeh Hashem Echad u'Shmo Echad. We know there's going to come a day when the nations of the world recognize that there's one God. Naaman reached that on his own through experiencing this great miracle. And unfortunately, this Naaman, he doesn't paint a lot of the kings of Israel in good light. Because when Ahav witnesses Eliyahu's acts on Har HaKarmel, he doesn't make any expressions like this. And when this Yehoram, who we're dealing with, when he had his army and they ran out of water. And all of a sudden, Elisha came about. Elisha happened to be there, and Elisha brought water for an entire army. He didn't call out any phrases like this, Ki ein Elokim b'chol ha'aretz. But so Naaman, it seems to a certain degree like he's done tshuva. Va'ata, and he says, and now kach na beracha, take the bracha, which means the matana, which means the present. A bracha is used for the word a mincha, a tribute. When we saw this together in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, when Abigail came to try to stop David from killing her husband, Naval HaKarmeli, so she also brought a biracha. She brought an offering to go ahead and make peace. When Yaakov Avinu wanted to make peace with his brother Esav in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, you take a look at the psukim there, the phrase is also, kach na es birchasi, take my bracha, not my blessing in terms of giving a blessing, but actual, something tangible, my bracha, my mincha, my matana. So, we'll stop here, and we'll continue Bezos Hashem next time with Elisha's reaction to the offering and the outcome, which unfortunately is going to end up being a negative outcome of the entire story. But what we've already seen in these psukim is we've seen that shift in Naaman, and the shift in Naaman of going from being extremely haughty to being humble to coming himself, and he comes to Elisha, the exact opposite of what had happened before. And also you have to imagine, and we'll see this again next time, in the words of Naaman. Naaman, in a way, is going to become a goodwill ambassador of HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout the world, if not just in the kingdom of Aram, that he recognizes that there only is a God in Israel. So Bezos Hashem, we'll see that next time.